Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict meets with young people attending an interfaith meeting in Assisi. Hear how a new style of interreligious relations is taking shape based on the day-to-day collaboration of young people of different cultures and traditions. And find out about a new Jesuit interfaith initiative being launched next year at London University. Welcome to the programme. The power of prayer to transform hearts, break down walls, and promote true peace. That was the focus of Pope Benedict's words to crowds of young people from different countries and different religious traditions who were present at his general audience in St. Peter's Square on Wednesday. The young men and women came to the Vatican as the culmination of a four-day meeting in Assisi, marking the 20th anniversary of the late Pope John Paul's gathering of religious leaders to pray for peace back in 1986. My colleague Charles Collins takes a closer look at what Pope Benedict had to say.
Pope Benedict greeted over 15,000 people in St. Peter's Square for his weekly general audience, enjoying an unseasonably warm November day.
I am pleased to greet the young people of different nations and religious traditions who recently gathered in Assisi to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the interreligious meeting of prayer for peace, desired by my predecessor, Pope John Paul II. I thank the various religious leaders who enabled them to take part in this event and the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, which organized it. Dear young friends, our world urgently needs peace. The Assisi meeting emphasized the power of prayer in building peace. Genuine prayer transforms hearts, opens us to dialogue, understanding, and reconciliation, and breaks down the walls erected by violence, hatred, and revenge. May you now return to your own religious communities as witnesses to the spirit of Assisi, messengers of that peace which is God's gracious gift and living signs of hope for our world.
Before greeting the pilgrims, the Holy Father continued his catechesis on St. Paul, the first in a series of important figures in the early church.
By his words and example, Paul teaches us that through faith we are made righteous before God, we encounter his merciful justice, enter into fellowship with him, and are enabled to build a more authentic relationship with others. Our justification is pure grace, an unmerited gift of God's radical love, manifested in the cross and the resurrection of Christ. Like Abraham, whose faith in God was credited to him as righteousness, we are justified by grace and not by our own works. Hence, our only boast must be in the Lord.
The Pope also said that it's Christ that's the true starting point of our dialogue with other religions, since he's the focus of salvation history. He pointed out that after Jesus, the name which is mentioned most in the New Testament is Christ.
Through faith and baptism, we share in the Lord's death and rising to new life. We now live in Christ just as he lives in us, in a mystical union which does not dissolve the distinction between him and us. St. Paul's example shows us that faith must be expressed in a daily life marked by humble adoration and praise of God, constant gratitude for his mercy, and a spirit of joyful trust in his gracious love, revealed to the world in Christ Jesus, his Son.
After greeting the thousands of pilgrims, the Holy Father imparted his apostolic blessing on the crowd, which we share with you now. I'm Charles Collins.
Sit nomen Domini benedictum.
Es omnum medus med seculum.
Adiutorium nostrum in nomine Domini.
Qui feci celum et terram.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
And my thanks there to Charles Collins for that report on Pope Benedict's weekly general audience. As you heard there, the gathering of young people of different religious faiths was organised by the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue to both commemorate and carry forward the so-called spirit of Assisi, generated by that first historic prayer meeting back in October 1986. Young men and women from nearly 30 countries met to discuss the specific contribution that they can make to promoting peace and overcoming the current climate of suspicion and often hostility towards those of different cultures and traditions. At the opening of the meeting, Undersecretary of the Vatican's Council, Monsignor Felix Machado, introduced the groups of some 13 different religious faiths.
I would just take just a few minutes in the beginning here. If I could call on all the Jewish brothers and sisters present here, if they could stand. All right. All those who are Christians, not Catholics right now, but say the Orthodox tradition and the Protestant traditions, would you please stand? All those of the Catholic tradition, would you stand, please? All those of the Hindu tradition, would you stand, please? All those of the Muslim tradition, would you stand, please? Those here present of the Buddhist tradition, would you stand, please? Of the Jain tradition, would you stand, please? Of the Sikh tradition, would you stand, please? Of the Tenrikyo tradition? Of the Taoist tradition? Of the Zoroastrian tradition? Of the Baha'i tradition here? Have I forgotten anybody here? I hope not. Of the Brahma Kumari, yes, Brahma Kumari. Thank you.
So a very colourful crowd representative of the many different religious traditions to be found on the continents across the world. But why young people in particular? What can they offer to the older generation of religious leaders? Well, to start with, a conviction that good interfaith relations begin at a very early age. Listen to one African participant, Mustafa Ali from Kenya.
This is a very important meeting, I think, for the young people. And we realize most times that interreligious dialogue is something that is being undertaken by people, older people who are above 30 years of age, and very few below 30 years of age. And I think it's about time that the young people and even children are engaged in interreligious dialogue, for them to be able to know about the other person, to respect the differences that are there in different kind of religions, and celebrate the diversity.
That search for a new style of interreligious relations grounded in practical day-to-day collaboration that leads to a real transformation of hearts was spelt out by key speakers at the Assisi meeting.
For us as young people, matters of theology and eschatology are undoubtedly important, but they will not likely form the basis of the kinds of grassroots interreligious projects in which many of us participate.
Catherine Lohr is a member of the World Council of Churches Central Committee and works with the Pluralism Project at Harvard University in the United States.
The term encounter often connotes a brief moment of contact. The kind of encounter I am speaking of, however, is one that is carved out of authentic, truthful, and sustainable relationship building. The kind where we can ask the real questions, as many of us have in these past 2 days. Who are you? What do you believe? Why do you believe that? Why do you wear that? In what ways do we need each other, differences intact? When asked in a context of mutual respect, these questions can get to the core of both our self-perceptions and our world perspectives, and even open us to see ourselves and others in a new light. Interreligious relations are not intended for compromising our core commitments, nor are they intended to be a forum for conversion. On the contrary, it is imperative that our encounter with each other comes from a place of deep religious conviction, of profound faith. This is what can lead us to a shared mission of healing our broken world. As youth in this moment in history, we face a particular set of challenges. Our world is marked by fear of the other, fear of the unknown. Many communities are clamping down, closing doors, building walls. In fact, my own country is deeply indicted in this. Only those with a certain set of prerequisite experiences are allowed to sit at the so-called master's table. And these divisions, compounded by fear, have created a terribly violent and volatile world. And yet we all hear the many voices that are calling out to us, people who are not within our own communities. Will we find our hearts and minds open to the challenge? Will we allow our work and witness to be transformed by the faith of the other? In our globalizing world, with communication technologies like email and Skype, we have new opportunities for collaboration. This new model for interreligious relations involves a shift from dialogue to service based on common human values. It requires a collective attempt to understand each other's social realities and spiritual moorings in the midst of a common attempt to comprehend, critique, and serve the cultures in which we inhabit.
So at the end of this meeting, what did those young men and women achieve? What will they take back to their own countries? And how will this experience change and perhaps challenge them and their local communities and hopefully influence those in positions of power? Take a listen as representatives of the different faith groups read out parts of the concluding message from this Assisi conference.
We came together in Assisi, called from nearly 30 nations and representing 13 religious traditions, to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the historic Day of Prayer for World Peace in 1986. Invited by the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue and sent by our religious communities and organizations, we, young people, came here to carry forward the flame of peace, ignited by our spiritual leaders 20 years ago in these same sacred spaces.
We encountered one another with honesty and sincerity to build up the bonds of fraternity that unite us all as brothers and sisters in our humanity, fashioned by and in God. From our commonly held desires for happiness, justice, and truth, we entered into genuine dialogue.
Prayed according to our respective religious traditions, imploring for God the precious gift of peace, While our prayers were offered in different places, languages, and ways, we were united in a single purpose, praying for peace. In this way, we testify to the truth that prayer does not divide, but unites, and is a decisive element for an effective pedagogy of peace, hinged on friendship, reciprocal acceptance, and dialogue between different cultures and religions. As Pope Benedict XVI wrote in his message from the 20th anniversary of the first Assisi meeting.
We walked as pilgrims to the site of St. Francis of Assisi's conversion 800 years ago, when God called out to Francis, "Go, rebuild my house." Likewise today, in the spirit of our respective religions, we, young people, hear the call to go, rebuild our world, which is too often broken by the violence and war.
We appeal to all people that peace is not something only to be sought in the halls of government, but also in the halls of our synagogues, our churches, our mosques, our temples, our pagodas, our gurdwaras, our attash behrams, our schools, our workplaces, our homes, and most importantly, in our hearts.
We will strive to follow the path to peace, guided by the precepts of our respective religious traditions. In the spirit of Assisi, and with a united voice, we echo the words of that great ambassador of peace, the servant of God, Pope John Paul II, as we cry out, "Violence, never again. War, never again. Terrorism, never again. In the name of God, may every religion bring upon the earth justice and peace, forgiveness and life, love."
Listening there to young people taking part in the Assisi meeting organised by the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue to commemorate the first historic prayer meeting called by Pope John Paul II in October 1986. Meanwhile, over in England, a new interfaith initiative is being launched at London University next year, aimed at forging deeper relationships between people of different faiths and thereby contributing to more tolerant and less divisive communities. Jesuit Father Michael Barnes is Director of Studies at London's Heythrop College Centre for Christianity and Interreligious Dialogue, and he also runs an interfaith centre in Southall, West London, where he tries to put into practice the principles he teaches about working together with people of other faiths. I spoke to Father Michael to find out more about the centre and about this new initiative to get others more involved in the dialogue of life. First of all, a little bit about that particular area of London, Southall. It's a very mixed area, isn't it, in terms of cultures and religions?
Yes, it's been a remarkable sort of meeting point for different immigrant groups and therefore cultures and religions. Really, for the last 50 years or so, there are three pretty large communities from other faith traditions: Sikhs, Muslims and Hindus. If there's one language which they tend to share, it's Punjabi. They tend to be North Indians. And over the years, a lot of other Sikh groups and Muslim groups particularly have joined them. So it's really quite a mixed, diverse group, which is not to say that you haven't got a very mixed group of Christians as well, all sorts of different Christian traditions. And our own Catholic parish, which is not small, is made up very much of Afro-Caribbeans, people from all over India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and even further east, as well, of course, as a lot of the longer-established English and Irish Catholics as well.
So a Catholic parish very much surrounded, though, by people of so many other different faiths, which makes for interesting daily living, I imagine, a real school of dialogue there, if you like, a dialogue of life, as it's so often called.
It is very much the dialogue of life, and I try to, in whatever way I can, I try to say my few words on a Sunday morning. I do one of the masses there always, and one of the things I'm trying to impress upon people is that dialogue is very much a matter of good neighborliness. It's the way you treat each other with respect and try simply to get on with each other, which is not easy. It's not easy in a very mixed area like that, and you've got all the problems of any inner city area, a certain amount of street crime at any rate. I'm not sure that it's all that great, but there's a drugs problem and there's a litter problem, all sorts of issues which make life together really quite difficult.
And do you see religious tensions actually playing into that or not in your area?
It's amazing to me how well the different traditions get on with each other. I think there are elements of a sort of gang culture. So you've got some, you know, young groups of Muslims, and you've got similar groups of young Sikhs who tend to have a go at each other. But by and large, the communities do seem to get on with each other and to respect each other. And I think that's probably because, well, on the one hand, you have fairly high employment rates. So you don't have a lot of people hanging around doing nothing. That's not true of all the communities. I mean, the Somalis tend to have very high unemployment, and they're Muslims, and they tend to be really on their own in many ways. But otherwise, it does seem to me that the communities really get on with each other quite well. And the other reason why they tend to get on with each other is because they do share a degree of common culture in the Punjabi language.
Overall, sort of in Britain recently, we've seen such a huge amount of interest and debate over, for example, women wearing the full veil or the role of faith schools in the different parts of the country. Do you think this is a sign that there is now more interest among British people in general about these cultural and religious differences, or more perhaps intolerance towards people who are different?
It's a very mixed response, I think. One of the most interesting things is that religion and religious difference and culture, and particularly Islam, has become a topic which people are prepared to look at and debate, and I think this is very positive. The other side, which is perhaps slightly more negative, is that the level of debate that you get, especially in the media, can be pretty monochrome. Religion is treated very much as a problem, and trying to get some more positive understanding of how religion does have a place and a very positive role in the public debate about, you know, who we are as a people in Britain, with all these different peoples and communities. Now, what is it that holds us all together? Religion is very often seen simply as a divisive element in that, and something which is acceptable as long as it's private. Does religion have a place in the public sphere? That's one of the questions, which I think is being debated, and I think it's being opened up, but sometimes you feel it's not being debated in a very sophisticated way.
What can you do about that? What kind of practical solutions can you offer to that?
I think it's a matter of, you know, an engagement which simply persists in keeping some of these issues open. In a place like Southall, I think what encourages me is that religion and religious difference is an issue. It's not something which people don't know what to do with. There is an extraordinary level of practice. One of the problems I feel in a place like Southall is that, okay, it's probably true that there's too much religion almost, and that you've got a lot of communities that tend to keep to themselves. And this is rather typical of what's happening in areas like Southall, I think, in Britain, that communities tend to fragment. They become quite strong in themselves, quite well developed. They have their own places of worship. They have their own social centers. But they don't talk to each other. And that's one of the things that worries me. How do you get the different communities of faith actually to talk to each other? I would like to think that there is actually, in a place like Southall, an extraordinary richness of religious practice, and that if you can get people to learn how to share some of the deeper issues of faith, of practice, or whatever, politics indeed, with each other, then that can be something of a, I think the jargon that's being used these days is beacon. You know, it can actually be seen as something which works, which isn't problematic.
You're proposing at Heythrop College, aren't you, the Jesuit College, in the new year, you're proposing a new course called Faiths Together to try and do exactly that.
Yes, it's really capitalising on something which I've done over the last few years since I've been living in Southall, trying to get groups of people to gather in Southall, taking them to the places of worship, getting them to meet some of the leaders there and the communities, simply stepping over the threshold into another place of worship and seeing what's going on there. It can be quite a transforming experience. So I've done that for a long time, and it's worked really quite well. I ask myself, what's the next stage as far as a place like Southall is concerned? How do you get some of these communities more involved in receiving, in offering hospitality to these different groups? And how do you get a conversation going, which is a little bit more than just a rather superficial how are you? So what we're trying to do at Heythrop is build on that contact. And what will happen is that there will be a group of people, I hope from across the faiths, it'll be mainly Christian, but there will be people from other faith traditions. They'll start by learning about other faiths here and some of the issues which arise, and then we'll take them from the classroom, as it were, in the academic centre, into the other places of worship, where they will try and engage with what's going on there and see things from a very different angle. So what we're doing really is playing with that movement from learning about other religions to learning with these people and trying to engage directly with them. That's the basic idea.
Is that your message to Catholics more generally, that it's very important to actually, rather than talking about other religions, to try and really get to know, to listen to other religions?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I think our schools and the record of our schools in this country is pretty good in the way that we've tried to get youngsters to appreciate that understanding other religions is intrinsic to their own faith. They have to be aware of others, of what they believe, and of what Christians have to offer to them, and what indeed they have to offer to Christianity. I think we're pretty good on that. But it's moving people from, as it were, the book knowledge, what the books tell us, to meeting the people themselves and finding that what the books actually say sometimes isn't quite correct. So that there are all sorts of differences and distinctions which you could only learn by really talking to the people and meeting them, finding out what faith means to them.
And my thanks there to Jesuit Father Michael Barnes, Director of Studies at London's Heythrop College Centre for Christianity and Interreligious Dialogue. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. We'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you possibly can. In the meantime, don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.